So in this segment, a conversation about how journalistic predation and show business can sometimes get in the way of the truth. We've seen that recently in the coverage of the fabrications of playwright Mike Daisy concerning working conditions at Apple's supplier companies in China. The stories of horrible working conditions were true, but the fabrications that led to the telling of those stories became almost a bigger story than Apple's labor problems, which the company has essentially admitted, in part, and seems to be moving quickly to correct. The same thing, you may recall, happened in a story about President George W. Bush in the heat of the 2004 election campaign, when national security and credibility with the armed forces was a key campaign issue. Questions about whether George W. Bush received some kind of preferential treatment in his military service got upstaged by allegations that CBS News may have relied on fabricated documents to make the case against Bush in a story by then-correspondent and anchor Dan Rather. Let's remind you now of how that played out.
Tonight, we have new documents and new information on the president's military service.
They're just wrong. There may be no evidence, but I did report. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been honorably discharged.
A lot of clues show that these documents had to have been produced by a word processor, not a typewriter that was available at the time.
At the time, CBS News and this reporter fully believed the documents were genuine. Tonight, after further investigation, we can no longer vouch for their authenticity.
The fabrication part got Dan Rather fired from his anchor job and from CBS News. It got the program 60 Minutes 2 canceled, but the story has never been fully fleshed out until now. In a new article for Texas Monthly called Truth or Consequences, Joe Hagan takes a closer look at President Bush's record. But more importantly, he also asks the question, what does it mean that this story, like Rather's career, was so quickly dismissed? Joe Hagan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
This is a really interesting story about getting to the truth of a president's military service, but also getting to the truth when there are huge distractions, such as the allegations of fabrication. How has that made it difficult for you to just literally report this story?
Well, what I'll say is that a lot of the time I spent in my own investigations were spent taking conspiracy theories about Bush's National Guard service and dispelling them. I mean, I had to dispel multiple conspiracy theories that had kind of like grafted themselves onto this story over the years. And the process through which that happened was how this story of Bush's personal history became a political football over the years. And it had taken this kind of circuitous path through the internecine, you know, Texas political world over the years. And in that process, had become incredibly distorted. And by the time it gets to Dan Rather in 2004, and his producer Mary Mapes are coming onto it, there are a lot of false information out there. There's a lot of cranks and opportunists who have grafted themselves onto the story. And when I started to pick all this apart, it just became weirder, wilder, and woolier of a story than I'd ever imagined. And that's what, you know, it's sort of what I've done is sort of done an autopsy of this whole thing.
Describe how what would otherwise be a source in a story becomes, in a sense, an opportunist, becomes a person who's not necessarily telling you the truth, but is feeding a line which may have political significance, in this case, possibly unseating a sitting president if Bush were to have lost the 2004 election.
Right. Well, there are a couple of different sources on this. One was a man who claimed to have gotten Bush into the Guard so he could help him avoid the draft in the late 60s. That was a Texas Democratic politician named Ben Barnes, whose motivations, were political at that time. He was on the finance committee of John Kerry's campaign. But the source of the documents that caused the furor was a kind of disgruntled National Guard officer in Texas who began to spin a story that he had witnessed Bush aides scrubbing Bush's military file at the base. And then he attracted a lot of attention, in particular from some reporters, one of the reporters who went on to make the documentary Bush's Brain. It was a man who had some credibility as a reporter, and he promoted this man's story. And because he promoted that man's story, it began to have some credibility with major news organizations, including the Associated Press, USA Today, Dan Rather, and CBS. And this man became, kind of began to spin, you know, a whisper campaign of his own that he had something, that he had somehow procured some documents. And he became a hot ticket. And he was actually on MSNBC in the early 2004 part of the election. And this gave him even more credibility. And he, you know, I met the man later. He was sort of a megalomaniac. So, you know, there was a kind of psychology to it.
Is this a story about how the modern media with cable and blog and various sort of referencing of internet sites and news organizations that aren't from the traditional, you know, old guard major market newspapers and television networks, that people acquire a credibility and a standing that they would never otherwise have had?
Absolutely, and it happened on both sides of the political fence. In fact, this story, I maintain, is like a watershed moment in media history of the last 10, 20 years. It really was the moment when you know, as you recall, those documents were called into question almost immediately by a whole swarm of bloggers and message board posters who were conservative, who questioned the authenticity of the documents. For them, this was seen as a huge victory of sort of cutting the knees out from under this old three-network TV, you know, mainstream media monolith, and rather was the sort of like, symbol of that for them. And, you know, this was, I maintain, you know, really the final chapter in a kind of, you know, what we used to call the monoculture of the 20th century, when you had these three networks and they had all the power. I mean, I think if those documents had been broadcast in the 80s on CBS, I don't think who would have questioned those documents.
Right.
Who would have been able to have had the power to question them and have that immediately spin out into the mainstream press. So.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, in a sense, can we ask the question, what was Bush's military service and did he get a pass?
Well, that was the other part. Well, that's where my story begins, because my thesis here was, let's remove CBS and Dan Rather and his whole controversy, put them aside. You know, he became the cork in this story. So you take him out, set him aside. What do we know? And as I got into it, it was both revelatory and completely banal. I mean, the fact is it was a very garden variety story. Yes, I do think that there's very strong evidence, and some of which is new in my story, that Bush received preferential treatment to get into the National Guard and avoid the draft. And then there are other questions about why he stopped flying and did he go AWOL. Those become much more difficult, but there's a lot of tantalizing sort of circumstantial evidence about what happened. But the bottom line is he was one of many.
One of many.
Like
exactly. I mean, there was all kinds of people trying to get a pass and get out of the draft.
Oh, yeah.
Then.
And
I mean,
the unit he was in was contained all kinds of sons of oil tycoons and other politicians and professional football players. And one of the beautiful ironies of this story, by the way, and where it really all began, was in the late 80s. It was George H.W. Bush running for president against Dukakis who sort of opened this whole can of worms. He attacked the VP nominee for the Democratic side, Senator Lloyd Benson. His campaign claimed that Benson had got his son into the Guard in Texas in the late 60s to avoid Vietnam. And the irony of that was that it turned out, this whole thing boomeranged on them, Senator Lloyd Benson's son and George W. Bush were in the same unit and had been recruited by the same man the same year. So it was that's when all heads turned to George W. Bush, and when people first began to – this was when it became a political – you know, it became charged with politics, and, you know, the rest was
it's
just
history.
Sort of an evolution of that.
Before we go, Joe, can you understand the temptation to forge something in this modern time when you can funge documents and cut and paste things? Can you understand the impulse to make something up?
Sure. You know, especially during those high-stakes political times. I mean, 2004, I've been covering politics on and off, basically for the last 10 years, and maybe that's a short period of time. But the 2004 election was as charged and emotional and polarized as any that
Indeed.
We're likely to see.
Wow.
And, you know, the intensity of that, maybe created the psychology around this. I think, though, that this event was a cautionary tale in some ways. but you know, as to why you might not want to do it. But also look at the birther thing with Obama. I mean, today we still have
it's the same thing. Joe. We got to go. But thanks so much for retelling that story and recalling that election. Joe Hagan's the author of the article "Truth or Consequences" for Texas Monthly. He's also a contributing editor at New York Magazine.
Thank you.
And one fascinating thing to remember, of course, about that 2004 election, George W. Bush ran against a guy with two purple hearts from Vietnam, and he beat him. So that's what's interesting for me. If you want more on this conversation, head over to Joe Hagan's Twitter feed, at Joe Hagan Says. He's been answering questions on this story. And here's a question for me. I said that Colorado Rockies 94-year-old pitcher Jamie Moyer is a knuckleballer. Director Jay Cowett corrects me. He's a junk baller, okay? Not a knuckleballer, a junk baller. I stand corrected. Todd Zwillick from The Takeaway stands corrected.
And I'm John Hockenberry. I'm always corrected on this program.
Never a
takeaway.